Confession number 12716, Mr. J. Coughlin, Reel 13.
Mr. J. Coughlin, Reel 13. You rejoined the battalion in the Delta, Mr. Coughlin, after being wounded. Were you still on anti-tank guns?
No, I went on driving the company commander, you know, Major Kirby about, like, you know, because I was excused equipment at the present on account of the wound on the back. It used to make it sore, you understand what I mean? And it used to rub on your equipment. And so, automatically, I went driving the jeep with company commander. You know, on the battalion HQ, that was. He was in charge of the anti-tank guns, the carriers, the mortars, and, you know, all administration, the HQ commander. Well, I automatically did be training with them then, you know, just to... We did a bit of rock climbing, we really did a bit of, you know, physical training, we did a bit of going out and like, coming back, going out the ship and coming up mock landing and landing craft, you know, and LCTs. They'd already were starting the train when I joined them, you know, I'd come out of us, but they'd already started the train. See, so they were halfway through it when I got there, they were more or less, well, ready for action then. Ready for the invasion. They'd done the initial training, what they were supposed to do for the landing.
Was it tough training?
Oh, well, it was pretty tough, because you see, it was tiring. Because, you know, when you go to invasion, you never know when you're going to get any sleep, you never know when you're going to stand down or what you're standing to, because you're on the go all the time. So, they kept you at it all the time, you understand what I mean? Sort of, well, toughen you up. Which they did do and all.
Were you training with live ammunition?
Oh, I trained with live ammunition, yes, definitely.
Were there accidents with that kind of thing?
Oh, not a little bit, accidents, but not serious that I know of. Oh, I had accidents, but... See, so you never get to know everything in different companies, because you're in your company, you know. You don't know if anybody's, you know, because it's more or less, it isn't what you call rushed up, but you don't know... What's happening? They don't broadcast it, like, you know, for morale, do they?
You've mentioned that headquarter company comprised a whole lot of different sections.
Different sections, yeah. There's still the intelligence section and all, and I don't know if it wasn't much like, you know, it was more or less like, well, they fit in with everybody, you know. I was in the headquarters in charge of tanks and anti-tank, you know, and then Bren gun carriers, and... administration and all, you know what I mean? Well, it was just run as a company, like, HQ company, right?
What was Kirby like?
Good soldier. Very strict. But very erratic.
In what way? What do you mean, erratic?
Well, he just didn't care for anything. You don't understand what I mean? It was one of these, if he didn't like you, keep out of his road. If he liked you, were in. But if he didn't like you, he had to... He'd pick on you all the time. You know what I mean? And he could just be a little bit, you know, a bit clever. Well, he was on the clever side, but as a soldier, good. In action, yes. Without action, a snob. Pinch anything, take anything, you know. But because he was in charge of his own HQ officer's mess, like he used to like the best. Very funny man.
How did you relate to him?
Well, he was all right with me. I got on very well with him, because I had to tell him what I think about him. And he knew. But he had to rely on me, like, you know, when we did go into statistics, I had to take him up. I was his driver, like, and he had to rely on me for anything, every time I went to go for recognizing anything, or, you know, anywhere, or whatever it was. He also had to rely on me. I'd really had to do for a jeep, like, you know, wherever we went. Because he was on the go all the time. reconnoitre and everything, and all, just the same as other company commanders were, you know.
And that was your full duty? You drove him wherever he wanted to go?
Wherever he went.
You didn't have any other duties?
Well, I still had to do my bits of guards on duties at nights, naturally, like, you know, they weren't ceremonial guards, you still do, you know, everybody does a bit of a guard, you have to do them, you know, give a bloke a break. You're in that company, so you automatically take your turn. Oh no, I wasn't excused any other duties. Just like a soldier soldiering, because it's the same as the wagon drivers, they had to take the turns. But if it's only patrolling around the wagons, you understand what I mean? On guard duty around the wagons, the MT section. Oh, I had to do my duties, my guard duties, and whatever other duties, and all, my PT in the morning, training, if you wasn't wanted, like them, that's if you're not wanted. I had to do their falling with other blokes and do the training.
You mentioned your training. You would obviously come in close contact with naval officers, naval men who were transporting you. How did you get on with those?
Well, I didn't come in contact. As I say, they were more than intelligence corps. They still had a little intelligence, but they didn't, not like the old-fashioned one in the 1914 war, was still they're more or less went around the company commanders, like, you know, the listening posts and one thing and another. We didn't come in much contact with them. But they went with us, naturally. On the invasion, they were training with us. About half a dozen tonight.
About what time of the year was this?
Yeah. It'd be about the May, wouldn't it? May, June, June, huh? May, June, something like that. When we're training about that, June, May, June. When they come back from Malaf, they've been up there in August. Might be earlier than that.
It should be 1943.
43, yes. Yes, 43. Oh, what is it, 42? Was it 43 there? 43. Not the 44 when we did it, there was a 44 then.
Had you any idea as to why you were training? Did they tell you what you were intending to do or had to do?
Well, it didn't work as much you can do. Only like, you know, what you'd already do. Once you hit that beach, it's make it work for it till you. Like anything else, you take your position and stuck there.
When did they tell you that you were going to invade Sicily? Was that on the boat on the way out?
No, it was more or less everybody knew, I think. Everybody knew. Well, about a week or a month, 3 weeks beforehand. It's saying when we were going to invade France, everybody knew, because we were blocked away. And once you're briefed, they brief you, and then they lock you at the you're not allowed out anywhere about, say, for the last 48 hours, let's put it that way, because if you're going on the invasion, so no information gets leaked out, you're all, and you know, come find a camp, everybody.
What do you remember of the journey to Sicily on the boat?
Aye, yes, I remember the boat, yes. Well, we landing craft, and they say, in the travel of the big transport ships, after which was all was bloody ammunition and goods on. Well, when we were like, we see the dive bombers diving the harbour, well, just above where all the English ships were, you know, bringing ready to bring their stores in and everything, you know, ammunition and for the build up, for the backing up of them. Oh, I can remember them. We were on land then. we were glad we're on land, you know, because they weren't off giving them the dive bombers, you know, in the bay. The Vola Bay, we're just below Vola Bay there, we landed.
Was it a Vola? And what was the landing like? What's your memories of the actual landing itself?
Well, landing, we don't remember, because I was at seasick. When he dropped the LCTs, I still had my drink one, and I went straight down with the jeep, you know. We followed on straight with the jeep, straight in. And we bumped nothing. I remember the companies on the left and right of us, I think, everybody. And they were lifting the mines, where the engineer company, then they were lifting the mines, that's where Captain Walton got killed. And after that we went, whoa, almost went 5 or 6 miles inland, before we bumped anything of any weight. Must have been 5 or 6 miles we went in. On the land, and we were sick. We wouldn't have cared for getting shot, because we were that sick. We were just, I wouldn't have a rough sea that bloody night. As I say, when they dropped, we just went down with jeep, like Kirby was ploughing in the water, the way, you know, getting in front, you know. And we never, no gunfire, no nothing. More or less walked in. So we're getting about well inland, well established, you know what I mean? We're getting the everything was landing, we're getting the bloody store, and the goods were coming up, and we weren't, you know, they weren't, I can't remember getting any LCTs getting knocked out. But they were, after the ships, you know, that was, they always come in behind you with the stores on for unloading, for getting on to land ashore for you, the supply ships.
Some parachutists had been dropped, did you see any of those?
No, the parachutes were Yankee, I think there were more Yankee parachutes than our dogs, they were more Yankee than English, there were more Yankee parachutes. But we did bump into one or two patrols, we fired at each other. I thought they were Germans, what's that, like a German helmet on then, the Yanks, and we were firing at them and they were firing at us. We didn't know, like, we, you know, wasn't being briefed on some of the things with them. Well, we're firing at each other. So we, you know, heard them talking and we heard us talking. I remember that. Bloody hell, the Yankees, they just firing away at them and they're firing away at us, you know. Lucky they didn't kill any of us. We just, you know, they were patrol, same as us going. But you always have your forward patrol going to fight to see what weight is in front.
How did the briefing that you got prior to the invasion, which told you about where you were landing, how had that gone when you actually had to go there? Did you identify your place as easy?
Well, not exactly, no. See, it was dark when we landed and all. It was dark when we landed. We didn't know where we were at, to tell you the truth. I think it was a shambles. If Judy had been there, could have just... I thought we could have wiped this all out there, you know. That would be my impression of it. So we could have been, as it happened, it was a bad night. I think they must have thought it was a bad night. It wouldn't invade that night or something, or whatever it was. But it was a rough night. So we were supposed to land the bears. We were drifting down, landing anywhere. Well, good job we did, like, you know, as it happened, like. And as it happened, there wasn't many. When we started picking the mines up, I never seen anything, you know, you laid down, they went through a gap in the mine for another, went through, and I never seen many of it. I only heard later on that Walton had been killed, Captain Walton, Crocker, Willington, he loves. He'd be a D company, he was. That's the only man I heard of that had been killed on the landing.
Were you told how he'd been killed? Had he stood on a mine?
Oh, it blew up in a mine, oh, sometimes it happened, brother.
Did you come across any civilians early in this invasion?
Civilians?
Sicilians, yes. You know, civilians.
One time I told we bumped civilians, I tell you, about 2 miles in. Because we were well back off the...
What happened? How did they take you?
Whoa, what? They were going mad with us. Going mad. As soon as they saw our uniforms, mad. Sicilians. Oh, they were going mad. Offering is everything. Offering is anything. They were glad to see us. Very glad, which, you know, we couldn't be bothered because we had to get for it, you know, because if you get a lot of civilians, they can hamper, you know. You can't, if you want to see, you put your head on, your mind's not on your work if you get a lot of civilians dancing around, you're messing about with you. And, you know, the officers keep, get on, never mind them, and you pull, you know, you're going through with the jeep, trying to shake hands with it and run around and dance and bloody, you know, trying to throw you anything, you know. But we have to get to an objective, you know, that's the main thing. And once when you get consolidated, like, you're right then, like, to see what's happening until you get the next officer goes, gets back, gets briefed again, and we're aware again, whatever it is.
How did Sicily compare with the fighting you'd already had in the desert?
Easy. We could hide. Or you could get behind something. In the desert, couldn't get behind anything. And you had your buildings and your bit of street fighting, actually.
You coped with that well, because it was an entirely changed situation.
I coped with it anyhow. I thought it was a bit easier than what we had. You bumped anything, you were both like stood facing each other like you were into patrol, but this on in a village or in a town where you're fighting, you could get behind something. And you used to go and pick each other off, like street fighting. We're trained for street fighting, it's infantry, aren't they? Like that's their what they're supposed to be, their basic training is street fighting, to mopping up, isn't it? So well, I liked it. Well, I didn't like it, like, but I thought it was just all different, no dust flying, or there were plenty of dust flying, like, we hit the buildings, like, right? You stood a better chance, let's put it that way. I think so, anyhow. I thought so. But you could hear the you could always get down if a shell landed or dive behind somebody when the bullets would fly. Well, you know what I mean? Well, it was
different. Did this not have on the other side? Did this not also encourage the Germans in the sense that they too could lay ambushes or what have you, so you wouldn't be able to see them either?
No, quite agree.
Did it make the retirement and the actions difficult?
Well, I think we had the better arm at that time. We were better armed in all ways, and I think we were better in arm and in tanks and in everything. We were up to standard, like, well, the Yanks were, and we were, so there was more of us and all, you know. Well, we've always been overrun before. We've been fighting them at 2-1 or 3-1. Well, they were fighting them at 2 or 3-1 then. So we keep them on the run. We never experienced anything like this before. And the big armour, and the artillery we had. Of course, them Jerry Woody's 88s, you know, they used to be deadly weapon with them, deadly 88s. So everybody seemed a bit more, well, the morale was good, because we were going for it. And when you're winning, everybody's morale is good. So when you're going back, your morale goes down, because you don't know what you're walking into. Well, when you're going forward, you can face it, but when you're going back, you know. To me, I didn't used to like run back. I would like to be running forward, mate. See where I'm going, not where I'm going.
What are your memories of your advance through Sicily?
Well, we did pretty well, as I tell you, till we got up to Primusol Bridge. We didn't lose so many men, not that I know of, anyhow. We didn't bump anything heavy. They were more or less pockets, you know. And the only thing resistance we got was the Ermengarden division, the Germans. But such as the Italians, they had no heart, anyhow. They were not. And there again, the Sicilians didn't like the Germans. They were sabotaging everything they could for them. You had the underground in there and all. And as I say, we went right up to Primusol Bridge and we got halted there. That thing was further. I never heard of what you call any serious battles. No hold-ups. Maybe 24 hours, but no 3 or 4 days or 5 days. We went straight, more or less. Well, if you read this, you see, we nearly went through it in about a fortnight, didn't we? 3 weeks, hopelessly. Well, therefore, their morale was very low, must have been.
What are your memories of your involvement at Primusoli Bridge?
Oh, my memories, well, we knew we were going in that night, like, and Kirby come to me and briefed me, like, with the jeep, like, what to lead the company in, like, and their carriers at the forest, we lead them in the transport with the men on and everything, like. But some of them went, I don't know, some of the companies went across the river. They didn't all go over the bridge, some went over the river way. And we went over the bridge because we had all the arms, you know, the stores and arms and everything on them. So we're letting us go. Well, I remember going over the bridge and I heard them shelling and banging and shouting. Oh. And Kirby was saying, get your foot down and get over that bridge. And when you get over, turn right into the farmyard. And he says, I've briefed everybody that they turn right or left as soon as they get over the bridge. No messing about, no going for a straight turn left and consolidate there. So I was leading with him, and as soon as we got the bridge, Kirby jumped off the jeep straight away with a walking stick. And he says to me, pack the jeep there and get out there and direct them. I said, no, sure. He says, get out there and get them down. And we're trying to wave them in, you know, get in there. At least, I remember them two or three carriers going straight past, and Red Wave was on one of them, and I don't know where the crews were, like. But we lost one or two crews because one of his shell and he hit in the bridge, you know. We lost one or two lads because they got one or two carriers out, and we lost one or two bits of things. But not to any extent. It was the next morning when Judy put his, you know, attack, you know, give us a good hammering. He was a hell of a hammer, shelling, and, you know, in fact, it's Ermengarden division, right, you know, ardent troops.
You mentioned Lieutenant Redway, who led these two or three carriers straight through. Had he ignored the signals?
He must have done. Well, he'd been briefed. He should have done. He must have missed the turning, because it was dark when we went, you know. It wasn't what you call daylight. It wasn't daylight. It was dark. Well, I don't think it was midnight when we went in. Like we crawled in like somewhere around that after midnight. No, it was dark when we went in under cover, like, you know. So he might have just missed the farmhouse, which he could have done, like, you know.
What happened to him and the carriers?
Well, about three or five of the about they captured some of them or killed the rest. We found through, well, about 3 days after, because when I looked there 3 or 4 days, all went up the road, we found them all laid on the road, dead. But some were took prisoner. Singlewood got took prisoner. Redway got took prisoner. We don't know what happened, what they did, whether they put a bit of a fight up or anything, but the carriers were knocked out, like, and all the lads were laid on the road dead. And all the hair had gone white with the sun, with rain in the sun all day. Right, white. And all the blood was, you know, where they'd been. Looked like they'd been stood in the car and you shot across the chest. Loaded. There was two of my friends that died there, a lad called Harold Redhead, and a lad called this Bishop Auckland, Dadlam's Rain, lived up Edward Street. Yeah, they both were sergeants and all, in two different carriers. Yeah. It was a sad deal. Well, as it happened, like, after getting from a shore bridge, like, about we fetched the artillery up from, you know, they weren't half pelt from the Germans then, like, in this go. Then they fetched the tank. We had to manage to get the tanks across, and then we surrounded them. And the Germans all come up with their hands up. I think there'd be about 200 or 300 of them. And there we are with Tommy guns guarding them against in the farm. I took them in the farmyard when they went up, me, and two tanks with machine guns trained on them. And Kirby's telling me, search them. There's a lot of them. They're running me searching. We had to search them for small arms or. But you had to watch it with these booby traps, eh, and take everything off them. So I went around searching them. Had about 15 or 20 watches up here, some were 10 or some were up there, watches, you know, taking off. Some were English watches that taken off our lads' prisoners, you know what I mean? Go on to all the German watches, Swiss watches. And I took I took all the revolvers off them, put the officers on mending at them, put them in a big pile, like, and cameras and one thing and another, we took off them. More or less, you know, anything that could kill a man with. We'll be frightened of fountain pens. On coat of booby trap, some of these little fountain pens, you know. You have to leave your fountain. If you drop a fountain pen and leave it and it was a booby trap, you pick it up, it was booby trapped. And one or two things they booby trap, you know, when they're retreating, army retreating, they leave a lot of booby traps, don't they? Like, well, tell you to be careful of them when you were.
So you were experiencing a lot of booby traps now?
Oh, naturally. Oh, yeah.
How did it feel that innocent objects like that, which you picked up, did this make you angry that someone was killed by a booby trap?
Well, sure, just tell someone got just to blow your hand off or something like that. Some of them weren't big enough to kill, you know, but it still knocked you out of action, didn't it? The more there was, if you got a lot of bone, you were weakened, weren't you? And we had lectures on it, like, you know. Oh, I used to have lectures on it, and I saw it. And they used to show you on a photograph, you know, on a film and everything like that, what not to pick up and what to be aware of and what trip wires and one thing and another. And you had to be aware for minefields, you know, you could always be on the lookout, always be on your guard, in other words, which you had to be.
Did men still take chances picking objects up?
Not to take chances, you don't think, you know. It depends if your mind's on your job. You must take chances, you should never get anywhere.
What was the attitude of the Germans like that you took prisoners?
Well, there's that many different creeds among them, as I would say. The German Garde were very ignorant men, they wouldn't mix with their ordinary Germans, they wouldn't mix, see, because we've got a lot of Latrians and a lot of displaced persons. A lot of them had been changed out, the Germans, they just give themselves up, more or less, or the Germans wouldn't entertain them. These Hitler Youth men, these proper Nazi men, wouldn't stand away on their own when we took them prisoners, wouldn't entertain them. Very upset, very.
Did they still feel that they would win the war, that they didn't feel they'd been defeated?
Well, they knew they were on the losing side after. When they took them in Sicily, I think when they were on the losing side, then Italy packed in then. Just as we got across Privis Old Bridge Lake and got onto Catania, I think it was up into Catania. That's when Italy packed in. That's and then we never bumped out much heavy there. Again, Primus Old Bridge was the heaviest fight we did in Sicily.
And you lost a lot of men there?
Oh, we lost a lot of men, yes, definitely. Because I tell you, I bumped the bloody cream of the German army there.
Can you picture that battlefield after you got rid of the Germans? And
well, it happened on that early morning. I was in HQ, and he says, there's a lot of wounded, so I volunteered to go down and pick the wounded out. And I took them, we were carrying them out and putting them underneath the bridge so they couldn't shell them. And I was carrying men out on stretchers. I was carrying a lot of wounded out, trying to get them out, so, you know. So they were coming with them and just getting them across the river into the ambulance people and getting them away. Because there was a lot laid about all hour. There's some laid, I just grabbed out of one bloke, I thought he was alive and he was dead. He'd been it stunned on the trench site and he was dead, one or two laid about. And I was looking for wounded, you know. And I was doing that most of the time with the wounded on. I picked my mate up anyhow while he's still alive. And Barnes, I got him out. I thought he was dead anyhow when I turned him over. He'd been shot up the arm, all up the arm, and you know, we lost a lot of blood. He was looking pale white. But when I got him on the stretcher, like, I carried him under, I had to go back, keep running back and getting these blokes. Well, we all helped him, like, that was any.
And we were under fire all the time.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Oh, aye. Under fire.
What do wounded men say to you in reacting to this battle situation?
Some of them, that's the ones saying that they're shocked. They can't, they just mumbling to themselves like anybody else. They just lost. You know, they don't know whether they're going to live or die if they're wounded. You don't know yourself how serious you are. So you're more or less in a state of shock. A lot of wounded, unless you're just wounded in the legs, like, and you're not put anywhere in the body, you don't know the state of shock a man's in.
So they weren't screaming, or?
Oh, no, they weren't screaming. No, they weren't screaming. I never heard any screaming like that. A lot of them shouting. I'm it, you know. Come on, we were trying to dash an air in there to get them, you know. Because they'd gone a bit further then, they left these wounded men, you know. Well, they couldn't tackle for it, was the only men, so we were just picking them up, like, and getting them out of the back, out of the road, everywhere. Because wounded men can hold you up, you know. You can't attend to them, you can't just leave them there, you've got to get them out the road, you know.
Did you become hardened to seeing gruesome wounds?
Well,
wounds?
Funny, naturally you come hardened, because it's like practice makes perfect, isn't it, if anything. And if you see a thing every day, you get used to it, don't you? Well, I think so, anyhow. I've seen lads with his arms shot off, lads with his legs off, and lads with, you know, half the face is shot off. Still alive, but you don't know if the ones, once you lost contact with them after that, like, you know. Because a lot of them were flown over there. Back into Egypt, then, that were badly wounded, when it wasn't established. He was flown back into Egypt, and lost them, you know, when they were getting up into the base hospital after that. They were flying them out of Sicily into Egypt, where the big hospitals were, you know.
After a major battle like that, with a great deal of stress and fear, what's the usual reaction in a person, in a soldier, when the battle is actually over?
I understand what you mean, yeah, well. He'll go and try and find, look around to find your mates. Because, see, after you took your position, you might have another battalion coming up, the reserves come there, go follow it over top of you, don't they? They follow up the road, and you'll sit there and rest, like, and well, sometimes you bury your dead or you're wounded and everything, trying to get them out, like, and you just go, well, who'll turn to get next, like, and you go around looking to see if it can. See who's who and what's what, and see what the state of everybody's in. And so they'll come and say, he got it last night. Oh, didn't he? He went. Oh, he's badly wounded. He the kill. Well, we've been used to hearing it that many times. He didn't used to take a fix.
Did it leave you exhausted, tired?
Well, it leaves you exhausted and tired. It leaves you worried. Are you going to be next? You look, you're getting through, like, when you're going to battle like that, and you come out right. You're more content where you see, well, you're looking after yourself, but you still look to see where your mates are. Always look to see your mates.
You've been through a number of battles, obviously, and survived them. Was it becoming more and more difficult to go into an action? Were you more careful?
No, not to me. It wasn't. I didn't think so myself. I thought, like, because there was that battle, and did it come what come, we weren't bothered. Because it's no good trying to be careful or trying to be good. You've got to just carry on, well, trying to be yourself. Otherwise, you'd send yourself mad. You'd be that. You'd go. Lots of them, which did. It's only naturally your nerves break. I don't care what a man is. His nerves break sometimes. You feel yourself shivering with your nerves. bit, you know, especially if anything just, you just had a narrow escape or something like that, you're more or less rooted to the spot for about 2 or 3 minutes, and you pull yourself around again. It's very nerve and then.
So you can get over that kind of feeling pretty quickly?
You get over it very quickly. You have to do. Because, see, you might be still be in action, mightn't you, see, so you've got to be on the alert again, you know what I mean? Be ready to feel it comes again at you. Because infantry, you know, you're in the heart of it. You can meet a man face to face, and it's the man, first man that pulls the trigger, isn't it? Like, you know.
In bitter fighting like that, obviously some men would crack.
That's a crack, yes. And some won't budge.
How did you deal with them?
Well, we left them. You had to leave them.